It is hour number two of Shirts and Skins with Chad and Trey. At 1:45, where are we at in society? The NCAA is now facing the wrath of the LGBTQ plus hashtag money sign percentage community. At 1:30, Tim Tebow is now a Jag, and MLB watched another no-hitter last night. Once again, the hitless team was the Texas Rangers. That's not good. And in mere minutes, it's the Shirts and Skins movie review of Ant-Man. I'm Trey Elling, and sitting across from me is Chad Hastings.
Yes, indeed. And yeah, it's wild. We talked yesterday on the show about the fifth no-hitter of the year, and talking about how historic it was, and there'd only been two seasons with five or more. And then literally last night, Corey Kluber does that to the Rangers. Trey, how about this goofy stat? Now, just as you want to make fun of the Rangers because now it's happened to them twice, guess what? It's happened to three teams twice.
Yeah.
This is the first time in the history of baseball three teams have been no-hit twice. Texas, Seattle, and Cleveland. And the overall record is 8 no-hitters in one season. We are at May 20th here. That was 1884 is how long ago it's been.
Yeah.
That's the ultimate record that they're looking for. By the way, Trey, it was one walk. Kept him from a perfect game, but it's more of what we've talked about. The dominance of the pitchers, the amount of strikeouts that they have, and just the lack of baseballs on the ground. The lack of baseballs being hit anywhere meaningful other than over the wall.
I feel like at some point this year, we're going to see someone break Roger Clemens' single-game strikeouts record.
You think so? Oh, that'd be a big one. Somebody to go. Are we still sitting at 20 on that one?
Yeah.
He and Kerry Wood.
Yeah, and actually Kerry Wood, of course, too.
Right? That I can still see that daytime game at Wrigley. I remember getting to key in on that.
Somebody still gets talked about regularly in Chicago.
Yeah. I remember because somebody called me to tell me to turn that one on. Hey, turn on. Kerry Wood's working on something crazy today.
Yeah, I feel like I ended up tuning in for the end of that one also.
Ooh,
you just see it. If you tuned into WGN even for a couple minutes, you could see just how much he was dealing that day.
Yeah, that was good stuff. Good stuff. So, yeah, baseball still dealing with all of those issues, if you will. Not that no-hitters aren't cool. They're cool. There's just, boy, a lot of them and quickly this season. We'll keep you up to date on the PGA. You do have some names you'll care about up towards the top of this leaderboard. The lead is still sitting right there at 3 under par. You've got Brooks Koepka at that number, and he is done with a 69. 3 under par. Hovland also shoots a 69. So they're in the clubhouse. So did Keegan Bradley. So then not only are they at minus 3, they have posted that minus 3 score. Morikawa is almost done, and he's at minus 3. Jordan Spieth is just getting out there on the course right now. And some other names you might care about, not having good starts. McIlroy plus 3. Mickelson plus 1. But that's not that far back. Fratelli's at plus 1 for the Longhorn angle, Scheffler at even par, and DeChambeau at even par. We will keep you up to date there. We'll get back into the Tim Tebow conversation at 1:30. Yes, he is a Jacksonville Jaguar. But right now, it is time. It is Thursday. It is about 1 o'clock. So it is time for the movie review this week. It was my choice, and Trey and I have talked about this one for a while. I said, you know what, man, at some point, I need to have you watch a superhero movie. I need to have you duck into this Marvel world. It's not Trey's thing normally, and I'm trying to figure out where to start. Could have gone Iron Man. It's one of the best, if not the best, and it's the very first one they made. But I just thought it's Trey. So if you go Iron Man or Captain America, it'll feel so it may feel a little weird. With Trey, though.
And I do have the exception. I've seen all the Batman movies and was very entertained by
those. And you've seen all the Christian Bale Batman run.
But those also strike a very different tone, I feel like, from the other superhero movies.
So you hadn't seen the Marvel stuff, so that's why I wanted to kind of get into one of these. So, for some reason, it hit me that Ant-Man might be an interesting way to go. So we're going with Ant-Man from 2015, because I know Trey's into Paul Rudd. Found a couple other things about this movie out that maybe would make Trey enjoy it. So, Trey, I'm going to just start with, after watching it, do you understand why I picked Ant-Man? Was that clear as you were watching it, or did you have some kind of like, what in the world did he pick this movie for?
I think...
Okay.
I don't have any of these other movies to fall back on in my consideration of why Ant-Man over some of these other movies, but there was a smarminess in this film that I think you felt like I would appreciate, and I did.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how much you knew that I enjoyed a number of the secondary cast, but I did.
Okay.
Michael Pena is one of my favorite actors out there.
Pena's yeah. really good.
Regardless yeah. of whether he's in a starring role, like when he was doing a season of Narcos Mexico a few years back, or when he serves in supporting roles like this, or Observe and Report, Michael Pena's awesome. Evangeline Lilly, who plays Michael Douglas's daughter, she was in mm-hmm. Lost. Big fan of hers.
Yeah, she's really good.
Rory Stoll has done a great job in various things over the years. House of Cards, he was on, or he is on Billions, I should say. You had Anthony Mackie in a bit of a cameo, and I guess he does play a superhero in one of the other movies.
Correct.
That's out more recently.
Yep.
Bobby Cannavale, who is one of the best character actors around right now. He plays the stepdad, I guess,
oh, yeah,
that is
I
married
him,
to
yeah.
Paul Rudd's ex-wife. T.I. is in this movie. Michael Douglas, who I just briefly mentioned. I mean, this is an incredible yeah. supporting cast.
And the ex-wife is an actress I always love.
Judy Greer, big fan of hers, too.
Always dig her. Yeah,
Justine actually hates to hear how much I love to say whenever we surprisingly see her in a TV show or movie. Oh, Judy Greer. I love Judy Greer. All right, we get it. You like Judy Greer.
Yeah, I thought the casting choices would be interesting. Also, as I'm researching this movie, Trey, I didn't realize some of these details. Ant-Man was directed by Peyton Reed. They changed directors while making it, but Peyton Reed ended up directing it. He directed Bring It On, the cheerleader movie.
Okay.
He directed The Breakup with Vince Vaughn and Jennifer Aniston.
Never seen it.
And he directed Yes Man with Jim Carrey.
Never seen it.
When I saw those three credits, I thought, okay, well, this would put him in a category of, this ain't your typical superhero movie director. Maybe this would be another reason Trey would be into the movie.
Who is normally directing superhero movies? A.J. Abrams?
You got J.J. Abrams, or you got a, you know, there could be a Joss Whedon. You know, that type of guy,
okay.
where they're a little more of a sci-fi type of guy. Also, I didn't realize, to help with the writing, they brought in Adam McKay to work with Paul Rudd.
Yeah.
They brought in Will Ferrell's writing partner, Adam McKay. He and Paul Rudd were buddies already at this time.
Mm-hmm.
And so they worked up the script a little bit. And that made more sense to me now, rewatching it. I've always liked the flow of this movie. The comedy, I think, is good in this movie. Even though it's a big action superhero film, they find a way to make it funny in spots.
Mm-hmm.
And Paul Rudd, does a great job. This, to me, still is. It's the most unexpected good Marvel movie for me. I had low expectations going in, and they exceeded everything I was looking for in this movie.
If you need Paul Rudd to pull off a superhero, I think this was the right superhero for him. Because he does a great job, and he clearly put the work in to get himself into the sort of shape that he still needed to be in for Ant-Man.
Yeah, that's
it's obviously not Thor,
yeah,
but it's still, he had to be buff, and he was. And I know he talked about it after the fact that, yeah, he had a trainer, and he was really having to watch what he eats. And let's be honest, we're talking about Hollywood here. They were taking PEDs, but PEDs are fair game when it comes to making yourself look like a superhero.
How dare you?
I don't know that for sure, but it doesn't surprise me, and it doesn't take away from my enjoyment of the movie, by the way. It makes it more enjoyable. So, mission accomplished with the performance enhancer, if you will.
Yeah, that shot after the fight, after the little fight practice or whatever, when he's training and he's dealing with some wounds or whatever, and you see the kind of shape Paul Rudd got himself in, it's impressive.
Yeah, that's not Paul Rudd and This Is 40.
It is not. No, yeah, that's true. That's not the knocked up Paul Rudd.
Yeah.
That is not. No. None of that. That's a different Paul Rudd. So, yeah, I thought those little things were interesting in this movie. What about the Michael Douglas character, Dr. Pym? How do you think Michael Douglas did in this movie?
I thought he was good. They're not asking him to do too much. They're asking him to be Michael Douglas, maybe a slightly more curmudgeonly version of Michael Douglas, and he pulled it off just fine.
There's a run of famous actors that have now been a part of the Marvel Universe.
Oh, really?
And it started with Robert Downey Jr. signing on as Iron Man was a big deal,
mm-hmm.
because that got them Gwyneth Paltrow. And then it started to roll from there.
Okay.
So by the time we get to 2015, you got Michael Douglas in this one. By this point, you'd had Robert Redford in one of those movies.
Oh, what did he do?
He was in, he was so good. He was in Captain America Winter Soldier, I believe, is the one he features in. He's tremendous. But I always liked that angle of the Marvel movies. They could get an established actor that you know who it is, you give a damn about them, and they give a damn about doing it. And I thought Michael Douglas did a pretty good job in this. And I didn't even mind the CGI. That's the other thing about this movie.
The younger Douglas?
It didn't even bother me as much as it normally does.
It didn't occur to me. So this is how I know it was a good job. It didn't occur to me that they had done that until I read about it afterwards. I'm like, clearly they pulled it off because in that scene, I was more distracted with how bad the green screen was. And I'm going to blame that one on the 4K technology that I'm watching these movies on now. I'm like, holy cow, I can practically see the actual green screen.
You got too much technology in some situations. You can see it all. You can see everything.
Honestly, I hate to ding a movie like this, but I watched it on too good of a screen. There were times where I was like, oh, yeah, I can see just how fake that set is right now.
Yeah, so that was interesting to get Michael Douglas, and then there is a sequel to this movie. There's going to be a third movie, too, in 2023, so it's been successful. Enough. It made almost $520 million worldwide, $180 million in North America. Mm. It was Paul Rudd's biggest open for a live-action movie, passing Knocked Up, I think was his best at that point. Okay. It was Michael Douglas's best open of any movie he's ever done.
Okay.
Up to that point.
I wouldn't put it amongst his, I don't know, five best movies.
Lord, no.
In terms of the movie or his performance, but okay. Yeah. I mean, that's what these superhero movies do.
The key to this movie, of course, is they had to pull off the effects of Ant-Man being able to, go from the full suit to shrinking down, back and forth. One of the things, I read that they were looking into this technology and telling this story when they made Honey, I Shrunk the Kids way back in the day.
Oh, interesting.
And so then this idea just kind of got shelved and put away, and they made Honey, I Shrunk the Kids. The beauty of this movie, though, is the whole idea here is that he's not trapped small.
You have
control over it. And
he uses it in his fights and as he's breaking into certain things.
So did all of that play well for you in terms of you're not a superhero movie guy in general, but all the small, big, the fight scenes, the sequences, the microscopic world, the macroscopic stuff, did all that play well for you?
I had no issues with that. There were some times where it just, and again, maybe this is because of the screen that I was watching it on, it felt a little bit cheesy. Their attempts to put a smaller version of him in what is normally a small part of this world and making that part of this world massive, oversized to him. But overall, I mean, it's what you have to do. I mean, you have to play with those special effects and that technology, and overall, they pulled it off. If I have a major gripe about this film, Chad, it's that it was entirely too long.
Really?
There needed to be a way for you to shave 15 or 20 minutes off of this movie. We do not need superhero movies. Again, this is me saying this, not somebody who's normally a fan of this type of flick. We don't need these movies going 2 hours.
Yeah, it's right at two, right?
Right at two.
Yeah, see, it's funny because me watching a lot of these movies, it felt so short to me as I was watching.
Are some of the movies two and a half hours long?
Oh, my God. Yeah. Oh, they're going 2.5 easy. And I think Avengers Endgame was 3 to 3.5.
It was brutal.
No.
Hard pass on that one.
It was long.
I get because it was the first movie in this series, you have to do some more background setup. But at the same time, I don't know if you hold off on the Anthony Mackie storyline for the next movie. You have him go visit the Avengers home a second time, and he has the encounter with the Anthony Mackie character then. That's probably a storyline that just wasn't necessary. It was cute, and you had the little add-on at the end that suggested a little bit more that there would be another movie, and those two would clash at some point. But again, my one major gripe is that the movie was just a little bit too long, but everything else I thought they did a great job on. And my favorite character other than Paul Rudd and also Evangeline Lilly, my goodness, she is so attractive, was Michael Pena and just how funny he was throughout this film.
He's really good. And, he's a great actor cause he can do serious or comedy.
Yep.
Equally well. This was a comedic role for him, and I thought he was very, very good.
I feel like we need to watch Observe and Report at some point. It's Seth Rogen as a mall security cop.
Okay.
Security guard. And
he's in it?
Michael Pena steals the show in this movie.
For the superhero nerds that are interested in this, the reminder is this was the last movie in the Marvel Phase 2 universe, the MCU Phase 2 for all the nerds. So they've had now, we're into Phase 4 of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Starts with Iron Man, and it rolls all the way through. This movie ended Phase 2. The scene you saw with Captain America in it and with Falcon in it, that references the next movie in the run, which is Captain America Civil War. And so that's what the Marvel has way too many mid-credit and in-credit scenes, but it's just one of their things. So it sets you up for the next movie that's coming. Mm-hmm. So they felt like they needed to set up the Falcon thing.
Yep.
Because then when Falcon says, I know a guy, the guy he's thinking of is Scott, and he's going to bring Ant-Man into the discussion. Ant-Man's first ensemble movie comes next.
I get why they did it.
Yeah.
But I'm just looking at somebody who's trying to watch an efficient, entertaining film.
I know.
And so, that's what I'm cutting out.
So I understand why you had an issue with the length, and I'll just tell you, I think if I'd have picked another one, it might have been worse for you. I knew I wasn't going to pick an ensemble movie for you, because you definitely would have think those run too long.
What are the Hulks?
No. One of the Avengers movies.
Oh, okay.
I wasn't going to pick one of those. And then it was going to be, it was down to this or maybe an Iron Man or Captain America. I was trying to stay as basic as I could get. I think you might enjoy those, the movies that set up those stories, but I decided to go a little off the beaten path since it was you.
Okay. Yeah. I think it was a good idea.
So,
it was.
So what about favorite scene for you?
Hmm. I like the training scenes a whole lot.
Mm-hmm.
Because you saw Evangeline really continue to get one over on Paul Rudd, who went into it somewhat cocky. And then you also got to see what all the different ants were able to accomplish. I thought that was pretty cool.
That montage was nice. Yeah, that was good.
Even though I said you should cut it out, like his fight with the Anthony Mackie superhero was enjoyable. Probably the final fight with Wasp Man in the daughter's bedroom.
Right.
That's going to be it.
I did enjoy something about those scenes where they would bring you back out to the real life scene, not the small version, and like the little train would just innocently fall off the track.
Yeah.
There was something about that I enjoyed.
Yeah.
I don't know what it was.
And then also him breaking into the safe in the house when he happens upon the Ant-Man outfit and then the serum or whatever.
Yeah, I like Ant-Man because he's not squeaky clean.
Yeah.
You know, they make it a bit of a grimy superhero. And the fact that it sort of got a heist feel in that moment when he's trying to fit, you know, the whole idea of a cat burglar or whatever breaking into a place is really cool. After rewatching it, I think my favorite scene is probably the very first time that he shrinks down, going from the bathtub to the top of the car.
Mm-hmm.
I forget how cool that sequence was because you're in it for the very first time and it's like, oh my God, what's going on here?
He ends up in the carpet and on the dance floor.
That sequence was pretty cool.
Yeah.
So I think that, because it really gets you into the world of it, and Rudd does a great job.
Him at Baskin-Robbins and being found out at Baskin-Robbins and his boss who has all this respect for him but still has to can him.
That was good. Dude, that's a scene Paul Rudd had. That is where I felt going back, where McKay coming in helped out.
Yeah.
That scene could have been in a Seth Rogen movie.
Where he's just being a real smartass in a situation, trying to charm his way out of it at the same time.
That was great. That was great stuff. All right, so you want to go grades here?
Let's go grades.
Go grades. I'll go first in my movie, right?
You go first, yeah.
All right, I am a fan of Ant-Man. Like I said, that most unexpectedly good movie of the Marvel run. I will peek just into that A world. I'll consider it an A movie for me as much as I like rewatching. I'll go 9.2 on Ant-Man.
9.2, okay.
What do you got?
Love the cast. Thought the special effects are good for what they are. Here's my issue with superhero movies, Chad.
Mm-hmm.
I know exactly what's going to happen. Even in the tensest of scenes, I know and you know what's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where I think my ceiling for movies like this is lower, just in terms of what I'm able to give it for a final grade.
Okay.
Than something where there's maybe a bit more uncertainty.
All right.
And that's why I'm giving it an 8.3.
Okay.
I think that's as high as I can go on a superhero movie.
You know what?
Maybe with the exception of one of the Batmans.
You know what? I really thought the number 7 was about to come out of your mouth. So I'm really excited to get the B. I will take that B because I was concerned that you were going to hate this movie, even though I thought it was your kind of superhero-ish movie. So I'm excited. I'll take 8.3 all day.
You know what? I just thought about my favorite scenes from Evangeline Lilly and Michael Pena one more time. 8.5.
8.5! I'll take an 85.
Solid B.
I will take that every day of the week. Now, here's the key. Did you like it enough to watch the sequel? Because the sequel's called Ant-Man and the Wasp, and she's in the suit, helping him out.
Oh, she is?
She is in the suit. With longer hair. Can I get you to at least sit the kids down and maybe go Ant-Man and the Wasp at some point?
Hold on. Ant-Man and Wasp, length.
Length. Here we go. It's got to be, he's being an old man about it. Won't watch a movie that's a certain length.
2 hours and 5 minutes?
Damn.
We no longer need the background set up, Chad. What the hell are we doing with 2 hours and 5 minutes?
Oh, my God.
The same length as Ant-Man.
The quantum realm takes a while to deal with, Trey. They got to figure some things out.
Let me check some images real quick.
There's a question out there of whether or not the mother is still alive and whether or not they can get her out of the quantum realm, all right?
Oh, I see.
You got to have things to deal with.
Oh, Evangeline has like a ponytail in this when they...
Yes, she
got
does.
Rid of that awful wig.
She's fantastic. If I'm not mistaken, Lawrence Fishburne's in the sequel.
Lawrence Fishburne, another actor I really like.
Yeah, we bring some real actors to this Marvel world, Trey.
Oh, boy.
It's some big dogs now.
If I'm out with mono for 2 weeks, at some point I may consider Ant-Man versus Wasp.
All right, you know what? We should have stopped at 8.5. We just should have stopped at 8.5 before I asked you the question.
There's... Oh, it has that guy too, the blonde guy from a bunch of different things, including Everybody Wants Some.
I'm glad you got to an actual thing. The blonde guy from a lot of things.
Well, I just saw him in something that nobody is going to going to know about, so I didn't want to waste my time. It's a movie that's on Netflix right now starring Amy Adams, and he's like a secondary character in that. And that movie is interesting, but nobody knows this dude's name. But he was also in Everybody Wants Some, which was filmed here in Austin.
Very cool.
Down in San Marcos.
All right, so there you go. There's our thoughts on Ant-Man. Next week is Trey's choice, which means I may get some payback for making him watch a superhero movie. We'll see. I guarantee you whatever he picks next week will be about 2.5 hours long.
No. I already know what it's going to be, although it is tempting to go Observe and Report now. I think we're going Seven Psychopaths next week. I was thinking about that one over the weekend. I'm like, man, I really want to watch that movie again, okay. So we're going to do that.
Very cool. All right, every Thursday, when we're not in football season, we'll hit a movie review on Thursdays. Up next, it's a Tebow review. Tim Tebow is coming back to the NFL, or at least he's going to try. We'll talk about that, plus the no-hitter that just keeps this baseball season feeling, well, you know, like that. We'll talk about it on the Horn.
Shirts and Skins.
When you hear all the words come out of him, it makes sense that he might write a book. Talib Kweli is his name. The music is incredible. What's this one, Trey?
This is Move Something off of his Reflection Eternal time. And Reflection Eternal was Talib Kweli and High Tech. That was his producer. Talib Kweli did most of the emceeing on these Reflection Eternal albums. Their most popular song was Move Something. And that was that.
And so Talib Kweli has a book out called Vibrate Higher.
Higher.
And it's about his career and some other things. Trey did an interview with him. We'll play part of that for you at 2 o'clock. And part of this we're going to hear today is got a little Dave Chappelle angle to it. Is that right?
That is correct. Yeah. He recently started a podcast with Dave Chappelle and Most Def.
Wow.
A lot of this was recorded during COVID. I think they spent some time in Dave's hometown in Ohio just hanging out, talking about all sorts of stuff. I think occasionally they would get some other well-known people involved in things. And I guess they are putting this out with the intent of eventually putting all the audio out on records. Like actual records.
Like putting it on vinyl.
Yeah, on vinyl. I heard Dave Chappelle on Rogan's show talking about this within the last couple of weeks. So We do talk about his friendship with Dave, what Dave has taught him. Talk a little bit about Half-Baked, which both Talib and I like a whole lot. But Dave Chappelle, it's hard for him to talk about that movie because Hollywood, they really Cheech and Chonged it up more than Dave and Neil Brennan wanted it to be. They wanted it to be more of a dark comedy, or at least that's my interpretation of it. So I get Talib's thoughts on that and a whole lot more.
That'll be coming up at 2. And obviously, to check out the full interview, go to booksonpod.com. We also have a link to that at hornfm.com. You check out our podcast page for that. We're keeping you up to date on the PGA Championship. Let me give you the burnt orange version. If you're a Longhorn fan, you got three golfers that you'll be paying attention to. Jordan Spieth, of course, would be the biggest name there. He is out on the course, even par through one. Scottie Scheffler, also even par. and he's done. Scotty has posted that 72 already. Dylan Fratelli's done as well, and he goes plus one, and that is definitely in the discussion right now because the lead is minus three. Keegan Bradley, Victor Hovland, Brooks Koepka. They have all posted 69s today, so that is where the lead sits. Dustin Johnson plus one, Rory and Justin Thomas at plus three. Just some of the other big names I'm watching. Bryson DeChambeau even par. Phil Mickelson even par. Now, Bryson's done. Smart Hulk did shoot a 72. Mickelson is just getting started. He's even through three holes. As soon as we're done here, I'm going to head home and watch some golf, PGA Championship. Can't wait to see what these guys do. I'll tell you, I can't stand playing golf in the wind, Trey. So watching the best in the world have to play in it, I'm more than excited to do that where it's not where the wind's not blowing in my house. I love watching them deal with it, and I don't have to deal with it.
Golf is the absolute worst to try and play in the wind, especially when you suck like you and I do.
Oh, my God.
Except when it's at your back.
Yes.
When it's at your back, it feels good, but, what, that's maybe a quarter of the time if you're lucky?
Yeah. If you hit one straight and it's blowing at your back and you get, like, 20 yards further,
yeah,
one shot, you feel better.
Yep.
Rest of the day sucks.
Yep.
Rest of the day just sucks. Because I can actually tell you there are some advantages at times when the wind blows playing tennis. I don't know about volleyball for you, but I can find advantages when the wind blows in tennis.
Oh, when the wind blows in your face in volleyball, you're on the good side.
Is that right?
Because the ball does all sorts of funky things, and it's more likely to drop versus you hitting it long.
Yeah, right. So you can adjust to those type of things.
Is that how tennis is also?
I
would assume so.
In general, you want it in your face because you can just about hit it as hard as you want.
And it moves around more.
Yeah, right. It puts its own knuckleball quality on it. The mm-hmm. ball's always going to go in, you feel like. With the wind, it can be tough.
Yeah.
But if you work it right, it can be okay. But yeah, golf in the wind is so difficult. So we'll keep you up to date on the PGA. Also today, the unnecessary NFL story of our lifetime is official. Tim Tebow is a Jacksonville Jaguar. Apparently it's 85 on the jersey. If you want to freak out and order one, many people will do that. But Trey, they're saying he's going to be a tight end. So that is how it's listed now. But we've already seen Urban Meyer go, you know, draft Travis Etienne and then give him the majority of the reps in the mini camp at wide receiver. I am reading that Tebow will be at a workout today in Jacksonville. This starts now. So whatever's about to happen, whatever coverage they allow, we're going to start to either hear about or maybe hear and see how they're using Tebow today. We could see a Trevor Lawrence to Tim Tebow throw tonight in your sports report.
Yes, we could. I'm sure if one happens and cameras are allowed, we will see it ad nauseum, Chad.
You're going to see 10 of them.
We'll see pretty soon whether this is the latest red flag that we should all be paying close attention to, that Urban Meyer may be in a little bit over his head at the NFL level, or if this is something that actually pays off. Even if Tim Tebow doesn't make the final roster, if he comes in and serves as a sort of example for some of these other guys of the sort of effort that they need to be giving on a daily basis. And I feel like deep down, if nothing else, that's what Urban Meyer is hoping for.
So one of the things I've been thinking about is Tim Tebow's prep for this whole thing. We know he's not going to go into this half-ass. We know he's not going to go into this with half effort. I wonder how many tight ends he reached out to. And I'm sure they'll ask him this, but how many guys did he talk to? He's been around some great tight ends. Not all of them murdered multiple people either. Mm. But he's been around some great ones. I'm sure he's got connections with some great ones. But if I was him, knowing what this position is right now in the NFL, I would have high levels of respect. I'd be concerned about this idea overall. And I'd be calling anybody, any Gronk, Kelsey, Jason Witten, anybody I could get a hold of, Gates, I'd be calling them all just to find out, hey, man, I don't want to go stomping on anybody's legacy here. I don't want to look like an idiot. What do I need to know? Here's what I've got. What can you tell me? How could you help me? Like, I wonder if he's gone into that level.
You imagine Tim Tebow paying Rob Gronkowski a personal visit from his offseason party barge? How long he is staying comfortably on that boat?
Let me guarantee you one thing. Tim Tebow would not take the mask off. Tim Tebow would wear five masks if he visited Gronk on the party boat.
I wonder if Tim Tebow has ever bonged a beer before.
I don't know. I don't know.
Just because he's Christian doesn't mean he can't drink.
When you say bonged a beer, that's the thing with the funnel and it goes in?
Yep.
That's what a beer bong is?
Mm-hmm.
I haven't done that. You know I've shotgunned a beer now. Learned how to do that.
Oh, do you want to do one?
I didn't say I wanted to. I'm just telling you I've never done it.
Okay. Well, you and Tebow are probably in the same category.
What's my advantage there? What's good about that? What's good about a beer bong?
It is easier to just have your throat open up and have a lot of beer go down in a short amount of time. It's a more efficient version of the shotgun.
Okay. Oh, more efficient.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, what the hell is this keg stand thing? That looks insane to me. I don't understand the purpose of that.
I never got the keg stand. It's just about drinking upside down and how it ends up going up your sinuses once you start to drown in beer as your friends are holding you upside down. I only tried a couple of them in my life. I was not good enough at the keg stand to want to continue doing that. Thankfully, there are certain things that in retrospect you're glad you're not better at. I'm glad I wasn't better at keg stands.
So for these five guys that are in Jacksonville at tight end right now, how embarrassing is it going to be if Tebow makes the roster? Is that going to be embarrassing for them?
I don't know how embarrassing it's going to be because you read the list of names off earlier. It's a bunch of first and second year guys.
Yeah, you really got to know your NFL to know these names. I mean, one of them played at Canisius, one played at Illinois State, North Dakota State, Georgia Tech, one at Ohio State, Luke Farrell, and it was in this draft, a fifth round pick. I kind of know that name. Nobody else, though. So, yeah, I don't know what this means. When all six of them get out there and run, is Tebow faster than any of them? Does Tebow have better hands than any of them? There's a thing, Trey. Have you ever seen Tim Tebow catch a football?
No, and I guess stiff is probably not the right word because tight ends can be stiff at times. Even in this new NFL, you still have the old school prototypes. I just don't know if Tim Tebow moves like a tight end well enough, and that includes, which he's going to have to be a dual threat, not only catching the football out of the backfield, he's going to have to block. Is Tim Tebow up to that challenge?
Yeah, is he going to – I talk about the freakiness at tight end. Is he ready to deal with the freakiness at safety, linebacker, and edge rusher in this league right now?
Yeah.
Think about some of the dogs he's going to have to deal with.
Well, the guys that he's normally responsible for chipping are going to be looking to take that extra shot on him.
Yeah, right. That's I hadn't thought of that. Yes.
I think this is a former quarterback who's fair game now.
You're right. I thought about it as them trying to get to Trevor Lawrence, but you're right. They may want to take a little extra pound of flesh with Tebow, if you will. That's interesting. I've never seen a man catch a ball that I can remember. We've seen him throw plenty. And I used to describe his throwing in the NFL as feet, throw. Because it took so long. I wonder if there's going to be a part of this that – he feels stiff to me. As I think of him as a tight end, he feels stiff. It doesn't that tight end, that position isn't stiff anymore.
So stiff for a quarterback for sure. I think he's still okay at the tight end position.
Okay.
Even though obviously he's more stiff than Kyle Pitts or even Gronkowski at Gronkowski's elevated age, which is somewhere around where Tim Tebow is.
He's
going to
be stiffer than a Blake Jarwin, right?
Stiffer than Jarwin.
Right?
Yeah, I mean I think of him like at his best. He might be like a poor man's version of, I almost hate to say these names because these guys were great tight ends, like a Heath Miller or a Jason Witten.
Mm.
Like that's what his movement pattern kind of feels like to me.
Dude, that would be the best news for Urban Meyer in Jacksonville. If anybody says either one of those names, even as like a 20% of, that'd be great.
I mean, when I say poor man's, I'm talking about like living under 183 at Burnett Road.
Yeah, yeah.
Poor man's.
Yeah, again, if you can get it to like, hey, man, that's about a quarter of Jason Witten. I mean, right now, that's all you're hoping for.
Right.
You just need to be valid. Forget about relevant or good. Just be valid at the position. Feel like you can actually be one.
Well, I think that he'll have similar football IQ as Jason Witten did. So maybe there's certain tricks of the trade that if he does pick guys' brains, there are things that he picks up and utilizes much more rapidly than we normally see out of someone shifting to that position.
I'm wondering if the Vegas bet on this thing is going to be kickoff of game one. Is Tim Tebow a tight end or is he a coach for the Jacksonville Jaguars? I wonder if that's the Vegas bet. They'll try this out. If it doesn't work, Urban Meyer will ask him if he wants to be a coach.
I feel strongly that he's not going to be on the opening day roster.
Okay.
At least right now. Perhaps I see some highlight tapes from these mini camps or when they get to fall practice that changes my mind.
Yeah, that'd be my guess too. But just looking at a couple of these guys, Trey, even though I have not heard of them, they are 6'4 and 6'5, and this dude, Chris Manhertz, he's 6'6, 255.
Yeah, and I feel like if Tim Tebow was maybe trying this in his mid-20s, I might feel better about his chances.
Yeah.
But you take the age in consideration, the fact that he hasn't been in football for a while now, and the fact that he's really only getting this opportunity because it is Urban Meyer.
Right.
Like, none of those things speak to any sort of confidence that Tim Tebow is going to be a Jag in 2021.
I think you could be right. You don't think he'll be a Jag? You think he'll be a Jag? Yeah, see, I did
there
that.
There you go.
There we go. All right, coming up at 2, Trey's interview, part of Trey's interview with Talib Kweli. Up next, though, it's an alphabet battle. The NCAA versus LGBTQ. Don't move. This is The Horn.
Shirts and Skins.
Yeah. Yeah. We sell crack to our own out the back of our homes. We smell the musk of the dusk and the crack of the dawn. We go through episodes too, like Attack of the Clones. What till we break a bag and you hear the crack of the bone? To get by, just to get by, just to get by.
Hey, look at there. Star Wars reference right away. Well done, Talib. Talib Kweli is his name. Trey's going with his stuff all day today because the interview's coming up. You can check out the full interview at hornfm.com, but you can go to booksonpod.com. So, Trey, Talib Kweli has written a book about his life and career. Finally.
Yes, Vibrate Higher, a rap story. It talks about his life, his music career, and just some general philosophies about the music business, some of the friendships that he has garnered over the years, some of which we do get into in our conversation. Again, you can hear that coming up after 2 o'clock or by hearing the whole thing at booksonpod.com. And excited to let you know that we're actually revamping the website, and that will release over the weekend, next week. You will be able to do a whole lot more at booksonpod.com in terms of searching for books by author, by title, searching for books by subject to make those conversations easier for you to access. Check it out, booksonpod.com.
Look at you. You've done so many, you need a bibliography now. You need a Dewey Decimal.
133 episodes as of Talib Kweli.
Yeah, baby. That's cool. Congrats on that. That's sweet. All right, so that's coming up at 2 o'clock. Let's get into where we at in society. Here's a discussion not many want to have.
Where are we at in society today?
That's right, Chad. Did you know that the NCAA has come out with an official statement? This happened about a month ago, saying that they support transgender students competing in college sports.
Wow, I did not realize that.
I didn't realize that either. Uh-uh. They made this announcement after a number of states put bills into place disallowing individuals who were born male but have transitioned to female from competing in, I believe it's high school sports.
Yes, I've heard it on the high school level.
So the NCAA said that it is actually allowing, let's get the specifics here. Males who have transitioned to women to compete in women's sports after undergoing a year of testosterone suppression treatment, and trans men who are taking testosterone can compete in men's sports. So even though testosterone is normally illegal, it is allowed in a situation where a female is transitioning into a man and wants to play college athletics.
And I'm assuming do they keep track of dosage there and keep track of levels?
It's the NCAA, so probably not.
Probably not, right? I guess
they just put out a blanket statement, and now they're not going to police it at all.
And maybe if you are transitioning from female to male, and therefore you're starting to take testosterone, I guess that level of testosterone would not ever, unless you really abuse it, would not get to the level that would hit on a test, because they are obviously drug testing the athletes.
So we tell you about this because the NCAA is now feeling the ire of the LGBTQ plus percentage sign community over what's happening with softball regionals over the next week. The NCAA is holding softball regionals on the campuses of Alabama, Arkansas, and Tennessee, and LGBTQ advocacy groups are upset because all three of those states have passed bills banning trans students from teams that match their gender identity.
At the high school level.
At the high school level.
Right, or at high school or lower, I guess.
High school or lower, yes. The public school level.
Right. Yeah, these are interesting discussions to me because obviously after what you just told me, couldn't the NCAA just say, well, yes, this is what we had on the schedule and this is the way it's going to be? Like when you get to our level, we're saying you can compete.
Now, the reason why that they are objecting as they are is because when the NCAA came out and said that it unequivocally supports trans students competing in college sports on April 12th, they said that they would only hold championships in areas free of discrimination and that it would continue to monitor the situation.
Okay, I see.
But this technically isn't a championship right now. It's the postseason that leads up to a championship, so...
Now, wait a second.
Is it a gray area, or does this count as championship competition?
Oh, see, that's weird. To me, I mean, there's a semantic discussion there, but when you say the... Like you and I were talking about today, they may make an announcement that the NCAA baseball and softball championships will be 100% capacity. But then I asked you, I'm like, well, wait a minute, does that mean just the College World Series on both sides? Or do they mean the whole thing? When I hear championships, that's everything that leads to the championship. To me, that's regional game one all the way through. But that may not be the case. So, yeah, I get it now. If the NCAA clearly stated that they're not going to places that discriminate, and then they do, then I get how maybe the LGBT community is upset. That they kind of were hypocritical there.
Seven states so far have passed bills into law or issued executive orders, just like South Carolina did, to restrict trans students' participation in sports. And like you just said, the LGBTQ community is saying, look, you've made these blanket statements about these states that have gone this route, but here you are allowing a postseason to happen here. And on the one hand, I understand their logic. On the other hand, how much do you want to punish these universities that, while they are affiliated with the respective states, may have a different opinion altogether about these things? This gets back to Major League Baseball taking the All-Star game away from Atlanta, right? Where how deep do you want to get into politics with your attempts to hold these competitions that, if you really think about it, do bring people together more than split them apart more.
Yeah, they do. And that's why all I think of in these stories is how can you conduct a fair competition that also makes people feel included? And that's where I'd love to see, like, what have they done research on a young Bruce Jenner, let's say, that is a badass athlete, has stopped taking testosterone, but starts taking whatever, I guess, estrogen or whatever the...
Testosterone is a PED, by the way, which is ironic on its surface that PEDs are allowed for a certain group. If they started out as a different group that is already working at a certain disadvantage, but PEDD is what you call hormone therapy because it's performance-enhancing drug.
So you're doing like a testosterone inhibitor
Testosterone out of the individual.
So once you do that for a year, they're saying you can then compete. But has there been research done on the effect on the body? Because in certain events, like we talked about, certain events, I totally get why the sports enthusiasts are thinking, man, we got to make this as fair as we can. We can't have, even if we're trying to be as inclusive as we can, let's make it fair. And I just wonder, has the effect, I guess they think you can see that effect over a year, and the person is not as strong for whatever the event is.
I've read research that still shows that individuals taking hormone therapy still have elevated levels of testosterone, that sometimes it takes a lot longer than 12 months to see more of permanent effect is not correct, because as soon as you stop taking the hormone therapy, the testosterone levels do come back up. But there is a certain amount of time where perhaps it becomes more acceptable. But I feel like rather than trying to wade into those murky waters, states that are saying, look, we're just not okay with this. The science is far from settled. And while you're certainly entitled to your right to transition to another sex if you want to, that may cost you your ability to play public sports.
Yeah. Oh, man, it's a complex issue. I'm sure, you know, and as with everything nowadays, everybody gets their sides, they dig their heels in, and they don't want to move.
I'm willing to have the conversation, and this is less about an individual making a decision that's best for him or her and more about just what is required to create a fairness within competition when they switch to a different team.
The other thing that I'm hoping goes on at the kids level is that you know, if you do this in a daily setting where somebody finds out that a friend of theirs is going to be transitioning, that they are transgender, that you would assume in that community of friends, they accept that, they change the name, they're changing pronouns, they're trying to be as respectful as they can. Well, then this is just the extension into sports. But I wonder what those discussions are like on teams. We've talked about this part, too. If you're a team that's going to play against that athlete, how do you feel about even outside of just if it's normal kind of, I don't want to say bigoted, that might be the way to say it, but if you're just normal sort of anti-trans thinking, I'm just saying in the sport part of it.
You can be pro-trans, but not necessarily for somebody who was born a male competing with girls or women in their version of that sport.
Right.
No, just because you're opposed to that doesn't make you a transphobe.
Right.
It means that maybe you're somebody who has a little bit more respect for basic biological functioning than somebody who's arguing the other side.
And as we talked about, I do think the sport matters. I know it's easier to do a blanket thing and just say you can or can't compete. To me, as an OCD sports fan, different sports would feel different to me.
Which sports feel different to you?
Like we talked about with golf. I think there's an argument for, I mean, they set up the different tees so that J.D. Lewis and I can go play golf together and it feels sort of equal because J.D. Lewis is way better. So he's got to go back to the tips and I'm going to go up to the mid tees or senior tees or whatever it's going to be eventually. Couldn't you just do that with a transitioning athlete? Couldn't you adjust it that way? I don't know.
Again, if we're creating just baseline competitive advantages for an individual or a group of people that are supposed to be in the same level playing field as those that they're competing against.
But can you guarantee?
Isn't that the obvious answer there?
Well, we can't guarantee that that athlete has the advantage for sure, can we? For certain.
I mean, the basic biology suggests that somebody born as a male is going to have natural strength advantages over somebody born a female. That's why they allow females who become males to take a drug that is otherwise considered illegal. It's otherwise considered a performance-enhancing drug.
Yes, I agree with that. I don't know if it makes them a better golfer. That's what I'm saying. Certain sports, could you just give an assessment, take an assessment of their handicap in golf?
I think as soon as you're saying, well, they're going to be starting off from different tees, that already just eliminates that possibility because they have to be starting from the same...
It had to be the same spot.
Starting right. line, yeah, yeah, the same tee box.
I get you. That is interesting. So the NCAA makes a statement, but then because of where they're holding the softball tournament, the start of the softball tournament, there's a little bit of pushback going on there. Keep your eyes peeled for that story. That's a good thing for the NCAA to define. When y'all say championships, what do you mean? Because to me, the College World Series is the College World Series. But what we're about to see is the NCAA championships. But hey, that's, I guess, what they figure out. Maybe they're just meaning right at the end when we get to our championship events is what they're talking about. All right, more on that, I'm sure, to come at some point. Remember, Texas softball will get going tomorrow as they get their regional round started. And this afternoon, or this evening, I should say, 6:30 is Texas baseball getting that big series started with West Virginia. Up next, it's part of Trey's interview with Talib Kweli. Stick around for that. Plus at 2:30, it is why May 20th matters, including the best taunts ever. This is the anniversary of the day Pippen did that to Patrick Ewing. This is The Horn.